Good morning. As many of you know, in August I went to Texas on vacation to visit my family, and I would get up very early around 6 or 6:30 a.m. to walk each morning before the heat rolled in. And one of the things I observed on my walk was all of these pristine lawns for miles and miles, and the water is running, and they have to water them every single morning because of the sun bakes it during the day, and it was overflowing, running down the gutter every day. And I felt this great heaviness and sadness because the Ogallala Aquifer, which feeds all of that region, is dying. It is threatened. And yet, here we are maintaining all of these pristine lawns. And it's quite interesting because where this idea came from was England, where the climate is dramatically different than Texas, and also only the aristocracy had big lawns. And so it's as though we feel that we have to maintain this certain kind of image, even though it threatens our very well-being. We also experienced in California, here in our own region, how over-tourism threatens our own well-being. It threatens the environment and the safety of our well-being. And two people were killed this summer. So it's kind of a wake-up call for us to look at what we value and why do we do what we do? Why are we living the way we are living, even though it's not working anymore? It really isn't sustainable anymore. So we are invited as Christians during this season of creation, which runs from September 1st to October 4th, to really look closely at who we are called to be as followers of Jesus Christ, who are called to live in harmony with creation, to help sustain the creation that God has put into our care. And so during this time, we're asked to reflect. The season of creation began in 1989 with the ecumenical patriarch Demetrius, who started a World Day of Prayer for Creation on September 1st. And then the World Council of Churches, which is an ecumenical organization that was started after the war to bring together all denominations around the world to help maintain peace in our world. They decided that we should extend this for a whole month. And the whole Anglican Communion participates in this season of creation. And the theme this year is living water. And I know firsthand as a farmer's daughter about living water. My first 6 years of my life, I lived on a farm. And so we had to dig a well in order to get water. And there were times when the well was really low, and we were only allowed 2 inches of water in the bathtub, which is sufficient, you know. It gets the job done. But we like to fill it all the way to the top and soak and all of those things, which is fine. But I knew very early on that water was something we had to, you know, balance. That sometimes there was an abundance and sometimes we had to, you know, curtail how much we used. My experience of abundance was going with my father to to lay the irrigation pipes that watered the crops. And he would turn this big valve and out would come gushing all of this water from the deep bowels of the earth. Cold, pristine water. Nothing tasted so good. And it was just gushing out. And then he would hook up the pipes and everything would flow out in West Texas, where it's dry as a bone, and would grow corn way up high, and cotton and maize. It was amazing. So I knew abundance, and I knew scarcity of water, that it was a resource that we had to manage carefully. And so that is our theme, living water. We also know that water is life-giving, and too much water can be disastrous, which we've witnessed in what happened to Nepal in the last couple of weeks, that it can be tremendously destructive. So water is life-giving. In the beginning of creation, God's Spirit hovered over the watery chaos and called forth life. But he set the water in order. There was boundaries. In the ancient world, it was believed that there was water in the heavens and water beneath the earth. And so in the creation story, it says that God put a tin plate, and that's the literal interpretation, to hold back the waters of the heavens, which was called the firmament, and also to hold back the waters beneath the earth. So there were bounds set on how much water could be accessed. And then created land and sun and moon, all of these things. So there was a harmony and a balance of light and darkness and water and land. So what this season is helping us to do is to call us into reflection, a deep time of reflection. Do I really need a pristine lawn when water is limited? It's kind of looking at our value system. What do we really need to live? I watched a wonderful interview. It's an old interview between Bill Moyers and Wendell Berry, and whom we heard a reading from this morning. Windleberry died a few days ago at the age of 92. He was probably one of the most, influential environmentalists in the United States. And he was a humble farmer, a poet, a writer, and you pick that up from him when you're listening to him. There is no pride. There is no arrogance. It is true humility in the sense that it means down to earth. Someone who is really connected to earth. The word humility comes from the word humus, which means earth. Means that he knows who he is and where he stands and what he values. You know, he moved back to his farm on Kentucky, which had been handed down for 200 years in his family. And when Bill Moyers asked him about what is the solution to climate change, and he was like, well, you know, we can't come up with a solution and then impose that. He said we have to be in connection with the earth and to listen, to ask her what she needs from us. That means that you and I have to go outside and take our shoes off and stand there and feel the connection. And to ask, to be in relationship with God's creation. It's not coming up with a solution and imposing that. It's being in relationship and allowing that relationship to show us the way. It's truly very Benedictine. In our inquirers class, we're learning about the rule of Saint Benedict. And the Benedictine way is the foundation of our Anglican heritage. Saint Benedict, who was a 4th and 5th century monk who founded Western monasticism, came up with 3 vows for his monks. And we see those vows reflected in our baptismal covenant. And those 3 vows, the first one was stability, to stay in one place. So like we are called to be members of this parish. And in that commitment to be a member of the community, we learn from one another. And sometimes it's challenging. Sometimes we have conflict and it feels uncomfortable and our inclination is to leave. But the vow of stability calls us to stand there and to work through our difficulties, because actually that's what we need in order to learn and grow. It's that being committed even when it's difficult. It's learning patience. And the true meaning of patience is being willing to suffer through it. That's the word patience, pasio. To suffer through it, to wait. It's just like normally we would all come in and sit down and that feels comfortable. But this Sunday we did a great litany. We have to stand for a long time walking through that. That's good for us. It's good to shake up our, you know, way of doing things occasionally. It wakes us up. So that first is the vow of stability, of commitment. And when it comes to what's happening in our world, we can't put our heads in the sand. And we certainly can't leave the planet. I don't know about you, but I can't afford the space shuttle. I mean, we're here. We're going to have to learn how to work through it. We have to be committed. We have to find our inner courage. And that's the first vow. The second vow is called conversatio morum. It's a challenging thing to translate, but it means commitment in change. That we are willing to be open to changing when it is necessary. That my beliefs can be limiting, and that I'm open to learning new things and learning new points of view, and I'm open and willing to change. I'm open and willing to learn that maybe the way of living that was passed down to me isn't working anymore, and we need to find a new way that is sustainable and makes way for the children of the future. That's the second vow. And the third vow is that word obedience, which we're like, oh my goodness. Obedience in the Latin literally means to listen with the intention of hearing. Not just listening, yada, 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 yada. But I really want to really get down to understand what it is that you're saying and why that is so important to you. That's what it means to listen. So in community, we are called to mutual obedience or mutual listening. When I do premarital counseling with couples, this is what we talk about, is the mutual obedience, the willingness to listen with the intent to hear the other and to understand why that is so important to the other. And it is in the process of deep listening that we actually change. It's kind of like it opens up the window just a little bit and lets in a little bit of light that we're like, oh, the way I was looking at this is really limiting. There's actually more ways, more perspectives of approaching this situation. So those three in unison, stability, change, or openness to change, and listening are the foundation of who we are, our foundation of our community in our baptismal covenant. And this is an amazing gift that you and I can work with in our community, but also to model for the world. That we understand that God calls us to be open to change and not just to do the things the way we've always done them. You know, you've heard the whole mystery of the turkey in the pan. Of why the tail's cut off and why the head's cut off and it's put in. It's because the pan was too small. But we always thought, well, it has to be done this way. This is how the turkey is prepared. It's just that someone didn't have a big enough pan. And so we're like, no, it has to be done this way. It's kind of how we are about some things. And so it's challenging us to say, is this really working? Is this really practical? I don't know about you, but I don't have children. I don't have grandchildren, but I have great nieces and nephews. I want a future for them. I want them to have abundance in their life, in the sense of joy and love and peace and harmony. You know, we have to be careful with our resources. We're called to be good stewards of those resources. And I will end with a quote from Wendell Berry. And he's speaking about our system of economy. He says, no amount of fiddling with capitalism can regulate and harmonize it. No amount of fiddling with capitalism can for long disguise its failure to conserve the wealth and health of nature. The evidences of it are everywhere, eroded, wasted, or degraded soils, damaged or destroyed ecosystems, extinction of species, whole landscapes defaced, gouged, flooded, or blown up, pollution of the whole atmosphere and of the water cycle, dead zones in the coastal waters, thoughtless squandering of fossil fuels and fossil waters, of mineable minerals and ores, natural health and beauty replaced by a heartless and sickening ugliness. Perhaps its greatest success is an astonishing increase in the destructiveness and therefore the profitability of war. So he says that's the way we're living, is where it has taken us. And so we have to take a long, hard look at that. And it's scary. It is scary what is happening with this El Nino. It's scary what's happening with AI, all of these things that are happening. But you and I are a community that is called to be committed to Christ in community and to model that love and joy, stability, change, and mutual listening to one another. And it's not just with people, but we are also called to be good stewards of the earth, to be willing to change when we see that the way we are living is harming her, and also be willing to listen to what is it that she really needs from us. The earth has a spirit and a soul, just like you and me. And we are called to be in relationship with her. Sally McVeigh, who was one of the first theologians to really bring this to the forefront many years ago, she wrote a book called The Body of God. And she said the earth is the body of God. To harm the earth is to harm God. It is blasphemous. It is destructive. It is the very thing that sustains us in relationship with God. We have to wake up to see that we are called to be in relationship with the body of God and the body of waters and all God's creation. When we celebrate the Feast of St. Francis and the blessing of the animals, we talk about our relatives. And the Native Americans talk about all the creatures as our relatives. They're not just animals. They're our relatives. They're part of our family on this island home. So during this season, I ask us all to take time to reflect on this. It is overwhelming, and we just want to push it away in the news and kind of, you know. But we have to be willing to put our toe in and listen. And one of the reasons is that we think we can't do anything, that we're helpless. There's nothing I can really do to change this. And that isn't true. We can. We can. Together, we can with God's help. That is our hope. Amen.